This is the Geek Word of Mouth podcast for 4th of March 2012.
And the first one of 2012, I think.
Yes, it is.
I'm Will. Nice to talk to you, the internet.
My name is Hen. I'm a middle-aged man in his underwear, safely behind his computer, who plays a lot of games.
Always in your underwear, or just today?
Mostly in my underwear, including today.
It's a good place to be.
Yes, that's why I'm here, because I'm a heavy gamer who doesn't need any social interactions.
Speaking of lounging around in underwear, how was the Comic Con?
It was very enjoyable. It was good, yes. I saw several people who I sort of wanted to see. Meeting
artists or just, you know, people that you...
A mixture, really. I met Kieran Gillen, who is one of my favourite authors in comics at the moment. He previously wrote for the UK version of PC Gamer, and is a regular contributor to various other things, Rock Paper Shotgun, I think. He now writes comics, so that was very good fun. I met David Peterson, who writes and draws Mouse Guard, and I saw a few people speaking, Mark Buckingham, George Perez. If you're into your comics, you probably know who these people are. It was all in all good fun.
Was there any traditional dress that...
the traditional dress of our people, the comic fans, yes.
Yes.
There was. I think there was a cosplay competition on the Saturday. One of the things that I think was quite brave of the organizers of the London Super Comic Con, I think that's what it was called, was that there was no anime at all. A lot of conventions obviously are supported by video games, by anime and things like that. It was just Western sort of comics, and pretty much entirely superheroes, really. Certainly the cosplayers were superheroes. And I think, you know, a few stormtroopers dotted about. I guess there are Star Wars comics. And yeah, the cosplay was generally, I think, of a high standard. There were a few outfits that I wasn't quite sure. I saw someone, a girl who might have been dressed as either Iron Man or Hellboy. When you can't tell the difference between those sort of two characters, I think you probably should have spent more time on your costume.
But it's entertaining nonetheless, I think.
Absolutely, yes.
sort of I prefer the look standards cosplay.
There was a really brilliant Galactus who had a tiny Silver Surfer model on his shoulder. He was very good. And a sign on his back saying, Ultimate Nullify Me. Another comic joke for fans of Fantastic Four.
Wow. That would be one of the reasons I would go to Comic-Con, is just watching the people and perhaps trying to touch them. But other than that, I'm not a big draw of Comic-Con myself.
But you've been before. You've been to San Diego, haven't you?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately. Okay. No, I don't think I've ever been to a Comic-Con. Actually, I might, but it's been a while ago. I don't even... I probably blocked it out of my head because of some trauma that I encountered with maybe a cosplay person. I don't remember now.
Was it the Sailor Moon with hairy legs and a beard?
I think it's Sailor Moon in a Transformer costume or something like that.
That actually sounds kind of awesome.
It's a he. So, yeah, but...
Even better.
Yeah. You know, in hindsight, you might say that now, but actually meeting the person might have been... Yeah.
Put some
dramatic.
Things into question, yeah.
Right.
So, okay, well, nothing major to report then, I guess? It's just, it was a Comic-Con?
It was definitely a Comic-Con.
These days, like, I don't...
They were talking about the third wave of DC's New 52. I don't know how familiar you guys are with those sort
of
things.
Yeah, it's like a reboot or something, isn't it?
That's
I don't
right,
really know
yes,
that much
yeah.
About it,
they've rebooted their comics recently, and so they're bringing out new titles of, you know, established DC heroes. I think the first wave sort of obviously included the big names, the Batman and the Supermans of the thing. The third wave is slightly more minor characters who people might not have heard of. And apparently it's all going very well. There wasn't actually that much presence from the big names in the industry. There were quite a few indie sort of names there, people selling their own stuff, which was nice. Lots and lots of people queuing to see Stan Lee, who is, of course, the star of his show. And that was, I think, I mean, a good 50% of the people there were queuing for Stan Lee at any given time. And lots of people selling comics and back issues and other random bits and pieces as well.
So. I'm just curious, being that I haven't been to one in a long time, what is the age group now?
It was interesting. I think there were a few children there, mostly, you know, with parents, looking about carts of things that they'd bought and looking a bit confused by the whole process. Some of them were obviously fans themselves as well. I think I saw a pair of Spider-Men, one of whom was a very young Spider-Man and one of whom was his father. And then there were some sort of teenagers and quite a few guys like me, sort of mid-20s, and some older people as well, people who'd clearly been following things for quite some time. But generally, I would say around 17 to 25.
Ah. Because I'm kind of wondering if the comic industry is still around, or it's like as strong as it was like 10 years ago compared to, you know, what the other media they've been competing with. So perhaps
my understanding is that comics have had actually quite a bit of a boost thanks to the success of, well, I guess it was X-Men sort of first that, you know, allowed all these films to be made, and everybody realized there was quite a lot of money to be made in superhero films. So they're more in the popular culture, and that's obviously brought a lot of people into reading comics who perhaps might not have done otherwise.
Yeah, but it's hard for me to picture like the fanatical fan that actually gets the next issue that comes out on the X-Men that starts today. It's kind of hard for me to picture that, you know, that type of fan base happening nowadays with all the other stuff that's happening. So
sure.
What's left is... Go ahead.
I did talk to a few people who I met there about this, just sort of out of interest, really. And it seems that, yes, there are quite a few people that still buy single issues, but a lot more people wait for collections, you know, trade paperbacks, just because it's more cost-effective, really. And that's the main reason. They're happy to wait the 6 months, a year, however long it is, for them to get enough of them together that they can then buy it at a reduced rate. And I mean, I'm the same way. I generally wait for trade paperbacks rather than buying single issues now. Although, it's a shame because Phonogram, for example, this Kieran Gillen thing I was talking about, they printed it originally in black and white because they didn't have any money. And so not a lot of people bought it, but enough people bought it, they were able to bring out a trade, which was also in black and white. And one of the things they said was that, you know, they would have loved to do a trade in colour, but not enough people bought it. And actually, one of the things that came out of the convention was they announced the third sort of series of Phonogram. They had one series and then another sort of limited series, and there's going to be a third limited series, which is really good news for fans.
Is that a enough mo with that one? Is that a British comic exclusively, or?
Yes, in both. I think in terms of the mostly in terms of the subject matter. I think it's published by Image, who are one of the
Wow, they're still around.
Yes, yeah, no, and but the first volume mostly deals with Britpop, which is a peculiarly British phenomenon, I suppose, and it's about music and magic, and lots of song lyrics within dialogue and things like that, sort of cool stuff if you're into your Britpop. The second series is about a single gig, basically, and each issue is taken from a different character's perspective of this same gig.
Right.
And each sort of thing, each character, you know, has interactions with others. You see scenes from different perspectives, which works quite well. And each sort of issue also reveals more of what's sort of going on underneath at the same time.
How does a British comic compare to US?
That's an interesting question. I mean, for a long time, I think the big sort of writers in America, in superhero comics and otherwise, have been British. I mean, starting, I guess, with Alan Moore.
Right.
But a lot of, you know, the really famous authors, Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, they've all sort of come from Britain, gone to the US to write, and become very successful there. British comics, in two camps, I guess. There's stuff like The Dandy and The Beano, which is sort of stuff for children, really. We have a character called Dennis the Menace, who's very popular here, who generally goes around causing problems.
Wait, isn't that an American kid?
It's similar to... Yeah, there's a similarly named American character, but the style is quite different. And there's also 2000 AD, a very, very long-running science fiction thing, the home of Judge Dredd, most famously. Yeah. And a lot of these British writers sort of found their feet there. I would say that, generally speaking, British comics are a bit more eccentric, particularly 2000 AD stuff, but you know, generally more obviously of the British kind of sense of humour, more surreal than quite a lot of American stuff.
Does it have like in the formulaic method, like the US, like, you know, somebody wears a costume and, you know, something happens to the person and then that person goes out and try to save the world and there's a nasty villain? Does it go formulaic like that, or is it...
It's interesting, actually. There are, I think, not that many sort of British superheroes of British origin, you know, published in Britain kind of thing. But that's mostly because Marvel and DC and the various companies that, you know, they've bought have slowly sort of cornered the market for superheroics, really. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of other things out there. And if you know of any British superhero comics that I should be reading, then do write in and tell me.
No, I actually am not a fan of those types of comics. So if, you know, that's why I'm curious if in England they did the same route, because that would be kind of disappointing for me, because I can go on about why I don't like that time of that type of formula, but I'm just curious if it follows the same way. I'm a huge fan of Japanese manga, so that's probably why I'm kind of bias against American ones, but that's just me.
Sure. Well, I mean, there's no British tradition for sort of some of the stuff that's covered by manga, sort of romance comics particularly, or comics about sport, or, you know, the various different things that manga covers that Western stuff doesn't so much. And there isn't quite the same sort of respect, I guess, as there is in France, for example, where Asterix and Tintin sort of rule everything. I don't know. I mean, I guess maybe one of the reasons that a lot of British writers and artists went to America was because there was a bit more respect for sort of doing comics and things there than there is here in some ways.
Yeah, some of them, I do like Alan Moore and some of his writings. And I didn't know most of them were from British, though.
Well, I'm not sure it's most, but certainly quite a few fairly famous names are, yeah.
Right, right.
Gaiman, Neil Gaiman.
Garth Ennis, I didn't mention.
No, yeah. So I don't have much to add, I guess, to that, because I was never really a huge, huge comic fan growing up. But just like any kid, got into certain things. But I think, like you, Hen, I wasn't really into the superhero side of things. But anyway, moving along. I don't know, what else do you guys want to talk about? Like Assassin's Creed 3? Excited anyone?
I'll happily briefly talk about that. I don't think there's an enormous amount to say, but yeah.
No. I mean, I guess the era sounds interesting. It's American Revolution, potentially, based on the images that have leaked.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised by that.
It's quite a jump, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah. Away from Middle East and Europe, sort of across the pond. I don't think it will necessarily be completely different. But I hope that, you know, the story is as enjoyable and compelling as Ezio's story was in the last sort of three games. I think that was very good, actually.
Does that mean our assassin's going to use some powder guns to do his work, or...?
Well, he's been doing that for about three games now, so...
Oh, okay.
He had Da Vinci on his side. I don't know if that was where, or if it was a Marco Polo connection to get the gunpowder. But yeah, because one of the upgrades you can get is a gun in your arm or something, isn't it? I can't remember.
Yes, and then in the third game, the fourth game, lots of bombs.
I still haven't caught up on Assassin's Creed, so. Well, I'm not familiar with Assassin's Creed, but this week I've been playing, for some reason, I'm in the adventure games mood, and I've been playing Black Mirror 3 and The Book of Unwritten Tales. If you guys haven't played The Book of Unwritten Tales and you're a fan of adventure games, I highly recommend it. It's pretty, pretty good.
Is it what, point-and-click adventure games? I haven't really heard of either of those.
Yeah, point and click, you know, where you have to solve puzzles and, you know, it's kind of
old school.
Yeah, I miss those types of games sometimes, and, you know, I just felt like playing a good adventure game, and I looked it up, and some people recommended that, and I got it, and it's really good. I'm surprised on how, you know, the quality of it
is
still good. Yeah. It's based off of fantasy, and it mocks the fantasy genre. And it has, you know, four or five characters you can play. It's pretty creative.
Were you been playing it on Steam, or just...
Oh, just by itself. But one of the heroes is a gnome who's trying to become a wizard. And they're mostly known for, you know, being mechanics and... science type of affair, but this special gnome wants to be a magic user. So it's like I said, if you're into adventure and you like the fantasy genre, then it's pretty good. It makes fun of everything that is out there and does it quite nicely.
Well, that's great. I think on the topic of adventure games, the biggest news probably for adventure games in the last sort of few months has been the new Double Fine adventure, funded entirely through Kickstarter. I mean, funded like several times over, I think, through Kickstarter. For anyone that doesn't know, Double Fine, Tim Schafer, and who made or helped with the various Monkey Island games and Psychonauts and
Grim Fandango,
various other sort of old school adventure games. So I think Double Fine wanted to make an adventure game and sort of worked out the absolute minimum they could do it for, which was about $400,000, and then asked for people to help them through Kickstarter, which is a sort of a way for getting funding from people directly, basically. And
it was like
they've
eight
got
hours, right?
Yeah, they're in 8 hours they funded it completely. I think in under 24 hours they got over $1 million, and now it's sort of somewhere. Two in a bit, right? I'm not quite sure. Fantastic news for all fans of adventure games. Fantastic news for them, I'm sure, as well. And possibly the future of making games.
Yeah, that's what everyone's saying. I mean, I think it is exciting. Like, it is sort of a major milestone for, you know, game development. And if nothing else, it's kind of, I don't know if it proves anything, but it definitely proves that there's a market, you know.
Yeah.
People are already put up, you know, money for something that's, you know, sight unseen. They don't even have a concept or anything yet. I mean, granted, these guys are all luminaries in their sort of, in that field, you know, in that genre of games. But yeah, it was really exciting to me. Did
Absolutely.
You guys pledge, or did you pledge, Will?
I did, yes, as soon as I heard about it.
I waited for some reason. I'm not sure why. I don't know what... And another sort of friend of a friend through my work colleague is a big fan. Like, one of his favorite games ever is... Day of the Tentacle, and I don't know if he has pledged either, if he's become a backer or not, which is odd. I don't know why. I mean, it's just like basically saying, yeah, I will buy your game, you know. And, but some of the sort of tiers, there's a tiered structure. I don't know. Have you heard anything about this, Hen? Or?
No, I'm kind of interested.
Do you know what Kickstarter is? Basically, it's a... It's a site where, like, you can, you know, sort of say, oh, this is my project, this is what I want to do. And usually there's a video that sort of describes it. And then there's rewards for different levels of, you know, commitment. So, you know, if you're pledging a certain amount over, then you'll get T-shirts or other sort of little goodies and things.
It's not only for games, is it? Because Okay.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of comics, I think, though.
Yes. I mean, some of my favorite webcomics, The Order of a Stick, for example, they've decided to, you know, try and reprint some of their old books, which are now out of print, on the basis of people saying that they'll pay for them. I think it's great. You know, it allows you to do stuff that would be tricky to do, really.
Absolutely. I mean, it was just really exciting. I mean, they must be over the moon.
Absolutely. No, I think there was... I mean, there's obviously been a couple of video updates for people who pledged. I don't know if you guys have sort of heard any information in them. But one of the things that they said was how thrilled they were because they were aware that had they walked into any sort of publishing house and said, we want to make an adventure game, you know, before hearing the concept, before hearing anything at all, they would have just told them to go home again, really.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, because publishers apparently don't feel that they can sell adventure games, and this obviously indicates there's a huge market out there. People, you know, the adventure game is not dead. There are lots of fans out there still.
Yeah, that's what I'm surprised about, that it's still here.
Yeah, I was certainly not expecting it to be so overwhelming, and neither were they, obviously. But, you know, I mean, I think they were looking for 300,000. And they want an extra 100 grand to do the documentary, so they're supposedly going to be filming every stage of the process of, you know, figuring out what the concept is, all the design meetings, all that stuff, sort of basically letting the people in to see the process of how, you know, difficult it is to actually make a game. So they just blew through all the... I don't know how much they've raised so far. Is it still open now? Like,
it is, yeah. It's open until Tuesday the 13th. And they've got nearly 70,000 backers and nearly $2.4 million pledged.
Oh, my God.
Good grief.
It's serious money. I mean, a lot of people are not just sort of going for the $15 sort of bare minimum option to get the game people want. The documentaries people want. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things, signed photos and all that kind of stuff. I think if you pledge a certain amount, then you get a character in the game, you know, designed after you and all this kind of stuff. It's amazing even that some of the really very high tiers, or what I would assume are very high tiers, but like $10,000 or more, two people pledging that. $5,000 or more, 10 people pledging that.
No, that's major money, yeah.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's certainly more than I could afford. I kept to a relatively modest contribution, I feel, but hopefully enough that, you know, that I'll get the game, which is the main thing I want, really.
That's a lot of faith.
Well, I mean, it's sort of crowdsourced, so, I mean, when you think about it, most of the people are probably only putting up, you know, the cost of the basic game. I don't know what the statistics are like, but I'm guessing that, like me, most people are like, well, you know, I'd definitely buy that game, and it's, you know, $30 or $40 or whatever it is for that particular pledge.
It's only 15 if you just want the game.
Oh, it's 15, sorry.
Yeah, well, isn't that a bargain, I would say.
Isn't there a security or a protection clause that goes in there somehow? I mean, what if they decided not to develop the game? What happens?
I think, yeah, actually, I'm not sure how that works, as it was the first thing that I'd ever backed on Kickstarter. But, yeah, I don't think they've actually... Have they collected money from people already? I don't know how it works. Yeah, I must imagine they've got some money because...
I can't think that
takes
they...
money to develop it, but.
I can't think that they would take any money. I mean, certainly before the sort of the pledge period is finished. So it's still at least until the 13th before
well, actually,
they get anything, right?
There was another one that came up just around the same time called Code Hero, and it's a tool, a teaching tool that they use in some school somewhere. I think it's in the US to teach kids how to. Learn programming, specifically JavaScript.
Right.
And it's a game, though, as well, and so it kind of... you can manipulate the game world by manipulating code, and so it sort of teaches you the basic principles step by step, but in the guise of a first-person shooter.
Hen, can you put those USB sticks down?
Actually, that's not me, the scratching noise. The USBs are 2 feet apart at the moment.
Who is it? Who's scratching?
Is it me, maybe?
Have you got a mouse in your computer?
No, I think whenever John talks, I think he might have... He's rushing the microphone somehow.
Okay, sorry, guys.
Is it the mic?
I can't really hear it, so I don't...
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, let me just pin it to my lapel and see if that helps.
Sorry for accusing you there. It felt a bit bad.
No,
there.
No, I totally understand. I would do this... I was... thinking about my flash drives as well when I hear that noise, like, are you actually doing this somehow when I'm not looking? But no, I was going to message you guys about that too, but I'm just glad you brought it in the forefront and we are dealing with it.
Yeah,
that's all right. So back to the Kickstarter thing. So yeah, Code Hero. I think what they do is, it's kind of like a telethon where they give you a finite amount of time to fund it. And I think that's to motivate people to back it rather than just going, oh, I'll do that later, you know.
Yeah. And if it doesn't reach the goal of whatever it is, then you get your money back.
Yeah,
you don't actually end up losing anything until...
I think they don't actually... Well, what they did with Code Hero is I pledged and they said, okay, you're a backer. And then when they actually finished, then that's when they actually charged.
Yes, that's right. My thing. So what I'm saying. You don't have to actually commit financially unless it's a success, unless they get
right.
The
amount of money.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay.
So if they don't reach the goal, then it basically does nothing happens. They don't take any money from you. But if they do reach the goal or they go over it, obviously then they take the money, and then it's just, you know, up to them to sort of update the page and let you know what the progress is. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Double Fine are going to do, because this is much more than they were expecting, which is obviously a good thing. But then that kind of puts a lot of pressure on them to also demonstrate that
they'll
be successful.
Them, you know.
Yeah, no, I think if anyone could, it'll be those guys. But because they've done some interesting things, and I think they've tried to use platforms to their strength, like Kinect. You know, they have sort of tried to think very creatively.
Sure. I think that hasn't always worked out perfectly.
No.
I'm thinking of Brutal Legend.
But, yeah, that's what happens, though, when you try to take some risks. I think partly that was also bad marketing, which wasn't completely their fault, I believe. But it also did sort of take people by surprise. Sure. I never played the game, actually. It sounds on the surface something that I would actually play.
Well, I think, I mean, as a concept, I think it was brilliant. I think that elements of the gameplay did not translate particularly well to console. Well, I mean, it was designed for console, but right. I think that maybe it was just a personal thing for me, but I felt that the controls were not as the right word is really they were not the ideal for me, and I'll just leave it at that. Well, I think consoles do certain things very well, and mouse and keyboard is better for others.
Did you play it through to the end?
I did not, no.
Because as I understand it, it starts off feeling very much like a God of War type of game, and then it actually turns into some kind of an RTS or something.
Sure. Yeah, which... I think they wanted to try and do different sort of styles of game a bit for different missions and different bits of the game.
But I think the game overarching, like the game actually turns into an RTS or some kind of strategy.
Sure.
Game, not just like as in little mini games, but like,
yes, no, I sort of.
Oh, but anyway, I, and so that yeah. people weren't expecting, and I think were a little bit disappointed. Anywho, well, just have to wait and see what they come up with. I mean, I think the onus is squarely on their shoulders, so it'll be interesting to see what they can kind of do with it. Sorry, just one more aside. Can you guys still hear the scratching sound or whatever it is?
No, it's gone.
Okay. Nope, it's gone.
I think I might need to invest in a good set of headphones and microphone. But, anyway, so what's next? Anything else you guys want to chat about? Anyone excited about iPad 3? Anyone care?
Actually, I'm depressed about iPad 3. When I saw this news headline saying... If you have an iPad 2, sell it now because the price will drop dramatically when iPad 3 comes out. And I just bought my niece iPad 2 for her Christmas present. So it's like, okay, why did I do this? I should have bought Asus Transformer instead of an iPad because now I just realized the limitations it has. And... I always did dislike Apple in that they always seems like they're exclusive somehow, and you have to cater to them in order to get what you want. Whereas other formats, you can freely do whatever you, you know, you're free to do more than what Apple intends with the other products.
Yeah, I don't really disagree with some of their choices, but yeah, there are some things that. Are annoying, I guess, about that, and I seem to encounter a lot of people that go Android or other things, you know, other platforms, just because they feel like they don't want to be sheep themselves. But ironically, like everything is going to be some kind of a, you know, you're not going to be unique, are you? if you have an Android phone,
you could build yeah. a phone out of bits and pieces, program your own OS, and then you can be unique. There you are.
That would be truly a testament. I'm not sure the end product would be as impressive as an iPad, but you know.
You'd have to also set up your own, you know, system of towers in order to actually call other people and that kind of thing. But
that's right. It's like, oh, join my network or whatever. You know, like, no, I've got too many of those. No, this is it would be just us.
Yes.
Did they even mention? I haven't read on the iPad 3, but did they even mention if it plays Flash?
No, I mean, I don't think it ever will, but that's kind of a different...
They burned their bridges there a bit.
Hmm.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate.
Basically, nothing has been announced yet. Everyone's just guessing from the announcement that of this sort of event that's going to take place that it's going to be an iPad 3 announcement, and there's been a lot of leaks. So the biggest thing about it that I've heard is that it will have a so-called Retina display, so you know it's going to be essentially double the resolution that the current iPads are. But I mean, I could be wrong, but I think the iPad 2 that did you say your niece? You bought it for your niece?
Yeah.
They do hold their value, and it's still a great piece of hardware. But then I haven't played around with too many Android tablets, and I've just heard varying things. I guess it depends on how, you know, picky you are about hardware. But
well, the reason, one of the main reasons, is to watch stuff on the iPad, and without Flash support, you pretty much rule that out. The other stuff, you know, is for her homework and you know, Facebook and whatnot. But if I could do that with an Amazon tablet, you know, that's why I was hoping. The reason why I didn't get the Amazon Fire tablet is because it's less powerful and it has less storage. But knowing, if I knew that it didn't play Flash, I wouldn't get the iPad. I would have gotten the Amazon Fire instead, which can play Flash.
I don't know if that's such a big deal anymore, but to me, just because that ecosystem has become so dominant that, you know, there's basically an app for everything, you know, and a lot of sites don't even use Flash anymore for their mobile stuff, you know, just because purely for that reason. So,
sure.
Perhaps. Well, the site I watched, it's
they have an app for it, don't they? Crunchyroll. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, Crunchyroll, but there's a lot of Korean drama that's the sites are not play it on there. It's just, you know, a feature that's not really hard to implement in. And granted, they have their differences and probably some disagreements and whatnot, but I can't picture, you know, them just sitting down. It's like, hey, this is strictly business. There's no ego involved. There's nothing else. We just want to implement this, you know, feature into the iPad. And so it'll be really, I think it would be much improved if they implemented Flash. But for some reason, there was some discrepancies and relationships that they had, or from hearing from Apple, it's because they view Flash as being backwards. They view it as DOS, you know, the prehistoric era of, you know, code or something like that. And that's fine and dandy, but, you know, it's a feature that you want your consumers to have, then, you know, by God, put it in there. It's not that hard.
Well, here's what I heard. What everyone said is, obviously, Apple and Adobe have had a huge rift come between them. And it's also about maintaining, you know, control over their platform, you know, and selling. I mean, it is pure business from what I've heard, because if, you know, if you could have a free Flash app that you just use via a web page, or an app that Apple actually has control over and gets some revenue stream from, then, you know, they're going to prevent the Flash one basically from happening. Although I don't know how HTML5, you know, how that sort of affects things. I think that probably point is moot now, because they essentially won, because their tablet didn't crash and burn. It's still one of the most successful tablets out there. And they just have a different approach that I think some of which makes sense. Yeah, it's draconian, and on the surface kind of doesn't seem right. But if you look at how fragmented the Android platform is, I think it can be really confusing for consumers, you know, who don't really care. And developers is the biggest thing is developers, because if you don't have developers on your side, then, you know, you've basically got nothing, because if you have no software, then no one's going to buy it, because there's nothing to do with there's nothing to do with the damn thing. So,
sure.
But I had a friend of a friend who's a developer, and he just said, I don't know why people would even touch Android at all, because yes, there may be a user install base, but those are the people who really don't care about apps. You know, they're not going to spend money for anything. They want it all for free. So they're either going to be tinkerers who, you know, sort of don't care, or you know, they're going to be, you know, your mainstream users aren't going to pay money for these apps. And I said, what about Angry Birds? Because it's on there. And he said, they had to give it away. It's free. It's a free app. To sort of convince people, like, hey, we're just as good as that other platform, you know, the iOS platform.
Really? I didn't know you could get Angry Birds for free. It's useful.
That's what this developer guy told me. I don't know if that's true, because sure. I don't have an Android device. But yeah, I don't know. My mom got a Kindle Fire, and I played around with it, and it seemed good enough. I mean, it's for the price, you know, it's... I don't think it was running Ice Cream Sandwich. It was running whatever the one before, Honeycomb or something. I didn't really like the interface, but it seemed like for a cheap tablet, it was something usable. You know, it wasn't horrible. So,
sure.
And it's a fraction of the price of an iPad, but I don't know. So, what do you guys think about Valve coming out with like a PC or a set-top box or a console?
Isn't that all entirely rumors? I mean,
yeah, completely.
It sounds just like complete speculation. I mean, the third iPad seems like a solid bet. That would probably come out at some point. I'm guaranteeing that. But some sort of console thing. I mean, what was it based on? They sort of spent a bit of money somewhere, and no one's quite sure what they spent it on. Is that right?
I think there was some sort of leak. I can't remember what the story said exactly, but it kind of makes sense, because there was a recent interview with Gabe Newell where he sort of said, we've been looking at controllers and we've been looking at different control schemes, and they have partnered with, I think it's Razer, on doing different controllers. It kind of seems like a logical step if they've got as much money rolling in as we kind of imagine, based on, you know, the dominance of Steam on the, you know, as a digital download service. I don't know. Yeah, it is just complete rumors at this point. So.
Okay. Well, that's kind of good to know.
I certainly don't know how I would feel if we have another competitor into the market, because right now it's kind of, you know, right now you have a good chance of deciding which console you want to go to, because they're kind of distinct. You know, the Wii has its certain charm, as, you know, for kids or for people who just occasionally play, and the, you know, PS3 is for the hardcore, and the Xbox Live is for the fans. But if you have a fourth console coming in, that's going to be an interesting chemistry. I don't know how they want to. If it's like a really hardcore machine with innovation like the Wii, excuse me, then I'm curious on how that would do.
Yeah, I really don't see it as another console. I mean, it could be that's what they're aiming for, but I see them trying to do what Apple and what other companies have done, but just in the PC sort of gaming space, whereas basically make something that's essentially an Xbox. So like the Alienware X51, that sort of, here's a very simplified platform. So if you wanted to do games, this is what you want, or this is all you need.
Right. You can just sort of put a game in and know that it will run automatically, pretty much, without worrying about specs, without worrying too much about.
Except that it's Valve, so it'll be, you'll put your code in and download the game or whatever, however it works. But I think that whole PC gaming thing does need a bit of a shake-up. It's obviously kind of become stagnant in the last, you know, few years since consoles have really taken the lead in terms of platform. I think it does need a bit of a simplification that would make it more viable as a platform. I mean, I know a lot of people would probably just, you know, think what I'm saying is blasphemy, you know, because, you know, it's usually for people who want to tweak things and want to to get the best performance. I mean, it's kind of a tangent, but it's ironic that in the whole market between Mac and PCs in terms of design, like you know, illustration and everything, it sound and video editing, a lot of people are moving back to PCs because those are actual high performance machines that you can, you know, build to spec, whereas Mac, you're kind of limited. You know, you either go for a Mac Pro on the very, very high end, which doesn't seem to be their emphasis, is on the tablets right now, and sure, on Macs and things, and MacBooks. But for pure performance, people who want that, a lot of those professional people have gone back to PCs and prefer that platform for that reason. So I don't know if it makes sense from that perspective, but from a consumer perspective, I think, you know, it can be complicated. And, you know, I mean, I'm not clueless about hardware, but the last PC I put together, I just really wasn't happy with it. It felt really herky-jerky, and, you know, you pour a good amount of money into put components that you know are good, and then weird things happen, and you're not really quite sure why. And I think it used to be kind of simpler, and now it's, you know, it would be nice to have something that kind of, I don't know, makes that process a bit simpler. I mean, maybe it's just because I'm older now and I just don't have the patience to mess around with it.
You're a grumpy old man.
Well, I'm that anyway, but yeah. Particularly about computers lately, it's just, you know, you just don't have the time to piss around and look for drivers and update the BIOS, and, you know, and I think I used to enjoy that kind of stuff, and now I'd just rather have it put together and just work, you know. And it'd be all right to buy something where it's kind of like, oh, okay, that's the, you know, instead of having to choose from 5,000 different things to put together, you know, you've got sort of a set, you know, few different tiers, you know, if you want the top end, you want the middle, or you want the low end, you know, and just pick one of those. So I kind of think that Valve might be doing something like that, a little bit like Alienware, but hopefully maybe not quite as expensive, you know, where, because Alienware is essentially just Dell, and
right,
you know,
I was going to say you're turning to a Dell,
yeah, which you know, they're not really known for making quality equipment, are they? So
yeah.
Well, they're saying that they're going to announce something at GDC or E3 this year, so I guess probably by, you know, toward the end of the year, we'll know something more if it's fact or fiction.
It may well be that the long-awaited Half-Life 2 Episode 3 might be coming out, and it might all be completely different. You've got to play it with a different controller that they bring out for it, but everyone will buy it anyway. I don't know.
You'll have to play it in the bath. Because they want gamers to be clean while they game or something.
That sounds safe. Yeah. I can't think of a single thing wrong with that.
Maybe they'll introduce a 3D Half-Life 3.
Oh, God, don't even joke, Ken.
I mean,
Half-Life 2 Episode 3D. Ooh.
That has been promised as the next level for the longest time. Like, I remember since the 80s and this guy was wearing this helmet during an E3 convention, and he was explaining how 3D will be the next step for gaming.
Wearing a helmet.
Where
it
is
helmet. Virtual reality in it? It was just a guy in a helmet.
I want to wear my elf, you know, costume while playing a role-playing MMO in a 3D setting, and it's not happening.
Slashing just virtual orcs, yeah. Well, give it time. I mean, I hope we never end up in that situation, frankly.
Well, you know, some of us, but I think there's a market of people who are willing to, you know, stand while playing their MMO and actually reenact the whole thing.
In their underwear.
I'm sorry. Virtually, they can be, you know, anywhere. Any underwear,
it doesn't
but
matter if you're dressed as long as your character is.
Right.
Brilliant.
We have reached the closed circle of comedy. And thus endeth the podcast.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, guys. for your time. Again.
Thanks for hosting.
No worries. Sorry, I'm a bit rusty doing it this again, but I think, we'll just hopefully get it back going regularly again and get back into the flow.
Yeah, it was good.
Just
okay. Thank you very much, John, for everything.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us.
All right.
Good night.